www.paisanoschicago.com.
As a DePaul student living in a big city like Chicago, I used to feel small and insignificant. What could one lone person do?
Thank you to Herb Alpert for another sterling rendition of the Spanish Fleet. This is the Polka Dot Crockpot. You're listening to Jake Baran on Radio DePaul. It's 8 o'clock in the morning on Monday, May 19th. So for today's show, I figure we're kind of in the swing of things. Yeah, it's hockey season isn't quite over, especially here in Chicago. But baseball, you know, spring is, I guess, here, or, you know, going to show up soon. We can string together a few 70-degree days, but that all depends on what our local weatherman says. And, you know, that Tom Skilling, he likes to leave out vowels. And, you know, I don't need a weatherman to tell me which way the wind blows, Tom. hang on to your hat. Yeah, well, that's the only thing covering your head. Ho! Well, there's not much there to protect. Oh, Tom, I'm kidding. I love you, Skilling, that big, goofy, round face of yours. Rain or shine, though, you play baseball. Well, I guess lightning when you're using aluminum bats isn't the best idea, but, you know, it's a no-brainer. They call it America's pastime, and when you dissect the phrase, you kind of understand its meaning a little bit more. Of course, America, that's not hard to understand for many of you out there. Nation's greatest country, world's greatest country, at the current present time. You know, we're Rome. But pastime. Or is it pastime? No, it's one word, actually, pastime. It means, you know, how you pass the time, really. You know, it's one of those combination words. America's pastime. That's what we do. We sit around and watch 9 guys on the field play against 9 other guys on the field. And it's entertaining. It's great. I don't know if you have to have been to a ball game. I mean, even if it was minor league, little league, major league, major league 2, major league 3, back to the minors. Man, that was a flop, wasn't it? I'm sorry, Tom Berenger, for that one. Oh, well. Bob Uecker was the best part of that movie. He was a Milwaukee Brewers play-by-play guy. We'll talk about him later, but yeah, we'll talk all about our nation's pastime. You know, it's a wonderful way to pass the time. you got nothing else to do. Why don't you play a game that, you know, brings out the best in people? It's got a lot of depth to it, I should say. You can learn a lot of lessons from baseball, from being out there on the diamond. You know, there's team, there's individual skills. There's guys who are good at some things and guys who are good at other things. Other things are more important than some things, you know. The big cleanup hitter and then the, you know, spot reliever or the kid whose mom usually brings the juice boxes, you know. Everybody has their talent. Or the kid who always had good beef jerky. Oh, sunflower seeds. Then there was a kid who chewed pumpkin seeds. Yeah. Who are you trying to impress? Trying to look older? I don't know. You learn other things too, like the management structure. You know, it's very simple at the minor levels, but once you get up there, there's, you know, the manager, coaches, owners and stuff. You know, you understand how things work, how wheels turn in this country. It's got a nice pace to it, I think. You know, not so much anymore. Games used to be a lot quicker. You know, an hour 45 was a good ball game. Now you only get that if Mark Burley's pitching. But games used to be much quicker. You know, there was not guys doing the no Mark Garcia, you know, check my gloves and do all this dancing and hopping around like a clown. There wasn't all that, you know. You got in there and you took your cuts. You took your cuts. You know, it is America's game. It's one guy against nine, you know, the rest of us. You know, it pits you against nine fellas out there, and you got to hit it where they ain't, put plain and simple. I think that might be Casey Stengel line. He spoke a unique language called Stengelese. He was a manager, and nobody could really understand what he was saying, but, you know, he put things so articulately that when he thought about it for the fourth time, like, whoa, Casey. You know, I'll read off a few Stengel quotes here. He's, you know, of course, was a manager of the Yankees when they had all those great teams with Yogi Berra and DiMaggio, you know. One time he said, been in this game 100 years, but I see new ways to lose them I never knew existed before. Come on, where's the good ones? Gil Hodges, he feels better on one leg than anybody else I got on two. Oh, come on, these are crappy. I should have looked these up beforehand. Yeah. But no, he was just a brilliant mind, and there's I got a lot of baseball songs on my iTunes playlist. Was fortunate to be blessed to listen to so many of these great songs about such a great game. Baseball. You know, I'd wake up every morning, you know, sometimes, and this would be playing on the alarm clock in my parents' room. And first, we'd always start off with, you know, the first song on the album, which is, you know, what you got to start off with. So that one would always play first, but then next on this CD, you know, you remember how CDs used to work, you know, they spin around, Laserdisc technology, something happens underneath there, they play about 21 tracks per, you know, remember? I still use them. But after that song would always come track number two, and track number two was by a duo called Abbott and Costello, and this was rudimentary to hear. It's basic. I hope you've heard this before, but if you haven't, enjoy it. It's a treat.
Well, Costello, I'm going to New York with you. You know, Bucky Harris, the Yanks manager, gave me a job as coach for as long as you're on the team.
Look, Abbott, If you're the coach, you must know all the players.
I certainly do.
Well, you know, I never met the guys, so you'll have to tell me their names, and then I'll know who's playing on the team.
Oh, I'll tell you their names, but you know, strange it may seem, they give these ball players nowadays very peculiar names.
You mean funny names?
Strange names, pet names, like Dizzy Dean and...
His brother Daffy?
Daffy Dean.
I'm their French cousin.
French?
Gouffet.
Gouffet Dean, oh, I see. Well, let's see, we have on the bags, we have who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
That's what I want to find out.
I say, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know who's on third.
Are you the manager?
Yes.
You're going to be the coach too?
Yes.
And you know the fellow's name?
Oh, I should.
Well, then who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the fellow's name?
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first base.
Who?
The guy playing
who
first.
Who is on first?
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell
that's
me.
That's it.
That's who?
Yes.
Look, you got a first baseman?
Certainly.
Who's playing first?
That's right.
When you pay off the first baseman every month, who gets the money?
Every dollar of it.
All I'm trying to find out is the fellow's name on first base.
Who?
The guy that gets the
that's
money.
That's it.
Who gets the money on
he
first
base? He does, every dollar. Sometimes his wife comes down and collects it.
Whose wife?
Yes. What's wrong with that?
Look, all I want to know is when you sign up the first baseman, how does he sign his name to the
who?
Contract? The guy.
Who?
How does he sign his
that's
name?
That's how he signs it.
Who?
Yes.
All I'm trying to find out is what's the guy's name on first base?
No, what is on second base?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
One base at a time.
Well, don't change the players.
I'm not changing nobody.
Take it easy, buddy.
I'm only asking you, who's the guy on first base?
That's right.
Okay.
All right.
Guy's name on first
no,
base.
No, what is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on
who's
second.
Who's on first?
I don't know.
Oh, he's on third. We're not talking about him. Now, let's begin.
Now, how did I get on third base?
Why, you mentioned his name.
If I mention a third baseman's name, who did I say is playing third?
No, who's playing first?
What's on first?
What's on second?
I don't know.
He's on third.
There I go, back on third again. Look, will you stay on third base
right.
And don't go off it?
All right, I don't even know.
Now, who's playing third base?
Why do you insist on putting who on third base?
What am I putting on third?
What is on second?
You don't want who on second?
Who is on first?
I don't know. Third base? Look, you got outfield?
Sure.
The left fielder's name.
Why?
I just thought I'd ask.
Well, I just thought I'd tell you.
Then tell me who's playing left field.
Who is playing first?
I'm not. Stay out of the infield.
Oh, don't
I want to know what's the guy's name in left field.
No, what is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on
who's
second.
Who's on first?
I don't know. Third base. And the left fielder's name?
Why?
Because.
Oh, he's center field.
He is center field. Look, you got a pitcher on the team.
Sure.
The pitcher's name.
Tamara.
You don't want to tell me today?
I'm telling you,
then
man.
Go ahead.
Tamara.
What time?
What time what?
What time tomorrow you going to tell me who's pitching?
Now listen, who is not pitching?
I'll
who
break is... your arm, you say. Who's on first? I want to know what's the pitcher's name.
What's on second?
I don't know.
Third base.
Got a catcher?
Certainly.
The catcher's name.
Today.
Today. And tomorrow's pitcher.
Now you've got it.
All we got is a couple of days on the team. I'm a catcher, too.
So they tell me.
I get behind the plate, do some fancy catching. Tomorrow's pitching on my team, and a heavy hitter gets up.
Yes.
Now, the heavy hitter bunts the ball. When he bunts the ball, me being a good catcher, I want to throw the guy out of first base, so I pick up the ball and throw it to who?
Now, that's the first thing you've said right.
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Well, that's all you have to do.
Just to throw the ball to first base.
Yes.
Now, who's got it?
Naturally.
Look, if I throw the ball to first base, somebody's got to get it. Now, who has it?
Naturally.
Who?
Naturally.
Naturally?
Naturally.
So I pick up the ball and I throw it to naturally.
No, you don't. You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's different.
That's what I say.
You're not saying that.
I throw the ball to naturally.
You throw it to who?
Naturally.
That's it.
That's what I said.
Listen, you asked me.
I throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
Now you asked me.
You throw the ball to who?
Naturally.
That's
same
it.
As you.
Don't change them around.
Same as you.
Go ahead, now get it over.
I throw the ball to who? Whoever it is drops the ball and the guy runs a second.
Yes.
Who picks up the ball and throws it to what? What throws it to, I don't know. I don't know, throws it back to tomorrow. Triple play.
Yes.
Another guy gets up and it's a long fly ball to because. Why? I don't know. He's on third and I don't give a darn.
What?
I said I don't give a darn.
Oh, that's our shortstop.
I'm an idiot.
Oh, what a bit that was there. Comedy geniuses, you know, they didn't need a fancy set or any crazy situation. They were just a couple of guys trying to figure out a baseball lineup. You know, how hard can that be? You know, the crazy names they give these fellows. You know, Dizzy Dean, Daffy Dean. Oh, there's some good baseball nicknames out there. There's also some bad manufactured baseball nicknames out there. I mean, you White Sox fans know what I'm talking about, how Hawk Harrelson is dubbed any player who joins our squad from Cuba, you know, automatically part of the military. Alexi Ramirez, our shortstop for the better part of 7 years now, was dubbed the Cuban Missile early on. He's a slender guy. You know, he'll hit about, he's hit anywhere from, you know, 3 to 20 homers in a season. You know, consistently average around 270. He makes all the plays that nobody else can make, but routine plays, you know, he'll botch. You know, that's just the way Alexi is. Then we had Diane Viciado, another Cuban, and, you know, kind of a sturdier fella. He's an outfielder, but large frame, you know, big shoulders. So he was dubbed the Tank by the Hawkeroo. Yokel. And so then this new fellow we got, Josie Abreu, you know, the guy who's been tearing it up in the league. Unfortunately, he just went on the 15-day DL with a little ankle soreness, so we'll see when we get him back. But what did he call him? He called him the Cannon. So I don't know if Hawk knows something we don't about missile locations and you know, the Havana jungles, but it's enough. Come on, Hawk. You're, I don't know. You don't need to pull out the whole arsenal. We'll see how they do this year. They'll be a 500 ball club, don't you think? Yeah, sometimes you're on a winning team, sometimes you're on a losing team. You can't win them all, but you should win some. There's a bit of Stengelies for you. Even in, you know, Little League, you know, you're on good teams, you're on bad teams. Sometimes you even make the All-Star team. I was only lucky enough to do that once. I had an interesting career. Lots of ups and downs through my progression. When it came time, you know, to start playing, you know, everybody did T-ball in the neighborhood. We played at the park. You know, we had these, you know, T-shirts and, you know, white baseball pants we'd all wear with our white socks and black cleats, you know. How goofy we looked. You know, the team names were great. You know, there was the Sharks and the, I think the Dragons, the Polar Bears. I was a Polar Bear. We were pretty good. I think we won the league championship and, you know, first in line at the pizza party at the end, which was great. Nobody ate all the cheese. But then, you know, Little League, you know, they have a draft. It's kind of cool, you know. They it's not like they're judging you. You know, they just want to see what kids can play, what kids can't, so they can divide up the talent evenly. You know, so one team doesn't dominate because it's got all the kids who are playing, you know, travel ball since they were playing travel T-ball, you know. So that's why they do the draft like that. And, you know, you land on a team and you kind of get to pick your position with most coaches. You know, sometimes when you're that kid, hey, let's face it, you're going to get stuck in left field. Have fun picking daisies. You know, it's a great way to occupy your time. I've seen many of left fielders do that to keep themselves occupied, head in the, you know, head on earth, not so much in the game, but they're here with us, feeling out the grass. But the position I chose when it came time to do it, nothing really attracted me much except catcher. I thought I could catch. You know, you got padding. You know, you got shin guards and a chest protector, a helmet. You know, ball's not going to hurt if it hits you. You know, just make sure you wear your cup. But you know when the ball is coming to you. Unlike every other position on the field, you know when the ball is coming to you. Exactly when. You know, 98% of the time. There could be an errant throw from an outfielder that just sails over everybody's head, and you need to be paying attention. But no, you know when it's coming to you every time. It's a nice, sturdy position. You know, all you got to do is nail that throw back to the pitcher down, and you're good. You know, you're good until at least, you know, when kids start throwing curveballs in Little League. You sit behind the plate, and you know, you had to endure it too. Though there's some doubleheaders that I remember catching when I was a 9-year-old kid. You know, on the pads and slugging water and sunflower seeds and, you know, beef jerky and cookies. There's always a kid on the end of the bench who had cookies in his bag. And he had the real nice baseball bag, Easton, Omaha Gold bat, and always brought cookies to the game. I mean, when you're up at the plate, of course, you know, 7 or 9 of us are going to go in there and steal at least half your bag of cookies. You had to know it was coming. You don't leave a bag of cookies like that on a bench full of, you know, 9 and 10-year-old boys. Somebody's going to take the cookies. You got to protect your cookies. Cookie monster. But no, I was behind the plate for most of my career as a little leaguer, to limited success. I tried to pitch one time. That's a tale. So we had this new coach starting my last year of little league, and this coach, I think he came from an outside league, maybe Vidim, maybe Midway Baseball. I don't know. He wasn't around the league, so you know he didn't really know. Well, he could tell on our team who was talented, but at that age, anybody can looks like they can pitch. If somebody can get it over the plate and lob it in there, he's going to be a good little league pitcher. He's going to put the ball in play and allow your team to make the mistakes. Unless they don't make the mistakes, they make the plays like they should. That's what you call a quality ball club. But anyway, so he asked all of us, a friend of mine, Adam Tapling, he was on the team. He was a decent hurler. He was a little wild, had this giant, stork-like leg kick. He was about 6'1", at that time, and he was just giant, whoosh, lift his leg up and hurl it in there. And I didn't like too much catching for him, let's just put it that way. So coach was asking who could pitch, and I was like, yeah, I could pitch, yeah. So we're at the Valley Forge Park, about 59th in Harlem, for those of you that know the South Side, right by this warehouse, what was it called? Storage facility. The box storage, the green, orange and purple logo, and people have the storage lockers there. So there was this big, I'd call it about a 10-foot wall that separated the end of the park, where we were practicing. It was just, mostly a grassland. It separated the park and the storage facility. So we line up, use that as a backstop, we're not too worried about, ricochets because we're right up against it. And coach is having us try out pitch and see what our arms are like, And I'm like, okay, all right, let's try this out. Let's get loose. So I go up there, and I'm kind of excited. This is my first pitch. Never pitched before. No coach has ever asked me if I wanted to pitch. I just sat my big butt behind the plate and enjoyed the game. But pitching, ooh. So... I had never really practiced a windup. I guess in retrospect, it may have helped, but I wanted to go with your classic, swing the arms behind you, come up over your chest with the glove and the ball, and hurl it in there, fire it. So that's exactly what I did. I can't remember who the catcher was, but just rocked back everything I could and fired, and I threw it about 15 feet high. It's clear over, straight over the storage facility. Just whoo. We weren't getting that ball back. So after that one pitch, of course, half the team burst out laughing. They knew what I was up to. They knew I'd never pitched before, but I could try to convince Coach Barrage that I could. So they chuckle about, and that was the end of my pitching career. One pitch, one wild pitch. Career stats. And I never pitched again. But I did try a variety of other positions. Third base was kind of cool. Second base I liked. It was a short throw, hard to screw up. Much like the throwback to the pitcher, only a throwback to the pitcher, you got time. The outfield wasn't bad. Everything in the outfield. I like the outfield in particular because you see everything coming. It's not like playing third base where you got a hot shot coming right at you. Outfield, it's coming. It may be coming at 1,000 miles an hour. It might be a rocket that you may just want to get out of the way of, but you can see everything coming. There's not many surprises in the outfield unless you run into a storm drain. It's interesting though, baseball, how it came to be and when it took stage, and how, well, some parks just have a lot of baseball diamonds, other parks not so much. Some cultures embrace the sport, others play other stuff. Well, it's big everywhere. You know, even in the South, that's where, you know, majority of the high minor leagues are, in Charlotte and North Carolina and Tennessee, you know. Just because they don't have pro teams don't mean they don't like football, you know. It's the way it is in high school Texas, and that's the way it is with baseball, too. I'm going to go to, speaking of baseball, there's been some brilliant films, too many to list, actually, based on, you know, baseball and its themes and stories. One of them is, of course, with Kevin Costner. You guys know what I'm talking about. Field of Dreams. Actually, an actual place you can visit out in Iowa. It's in Dyersville, Iowa. My sister, my brother, and my old man have been there. But I missed that road trip to Davenport, so I didn't get to go. But I heard my little brother there. You can play on the field. It's cool. It's you can go out there, you know, lob a few pitches, take a few cuts out there on the field. And so my brother and my two brothers and my sister and my dad were playing around. And I think Stan hit a line drive out into the outfield. And so Zach, you know, my littlest brother, went out to go find it. And my old man swears that he took two steps in and just vanished in the cornfield. You know, that was one of the coolest parts of Field of Dreams, just vanishing. I'm melting. Oh, but speaking of Field of Dreams, here's a nice speech by James Earl Jones, one of the voices, top three voices in the world today. I mean, you gotta put J.E.J. up there. Here he is.
Ray, people will come, Ray. They'll come to Iowa for reasons they can't even fathom. They'll turn up your driveway, not knowing for sure why they're doing it. They'll arrive at your door, as innocent as children, longing for the past. Of course, we won't mind if you look around, you'll say. It's only $20 per person. They'll pass over the money without even thinking about it. For it is money they have and peace they like.
Ray, just sign the papers.
And they'll walk out to the bleachers. Sit in shirt sleeves on a perfect afternoon. They'll find they have reserved seats somewhere along one of the baselines. Where they sat when they were children and cheered their heroes. And they'll watch the game. And it'll be as if they'd dipped themselves in magic waters. The memories will be so thick, they'll have to brush them away from their faces.
Ray, when the bank opens in the morning, they'll foreclose.
People will come, Ray.
You're broke, Ray. You sell now or you lose everything.
The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America has rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It's been erased like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the time. This field, this game, is a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good. And it could be again. Oh, people will come, Ray. People will most definitely come.
Ray, you will lose everything. You will be evicted.
People will come, Ray. People will come. And they will. You know, wherever somebody's playing ball, you know, there's people who stop by to watch. I've caught a few baseball games like that. You know, you're in passing by, you check it out. That was out in Boston one time, actually, at Tufts University. Caught a little bit of a softball game on my way to a football game. you know, it's little things like that. Whenever somebody's playing a ball game, they could use a cheer. I was playing, actually played a softball game. Dusted off the cleats last weekend. Yeah. Haven't played. It was 16-inch, of course, the clincher one. That's the only softball I like to play, really. The stuff with the gloves and, you know, the 12-inch balls, that's good. It's good for the girls' game, you know, the high school sport. Collegiate, you know, there's even a professional league. They only have about six teams or so. You know, I think they should really partner with the MLB the same way the WNBA does. That would give them more exposure. You know, softball is a great game to watch live like that. The reason it doesn't really catch on TV is because it's so darn quick. You know, you got these hurlers throwing pitches at 65 miles an hour, and then these girls slap it over to third base. The cameras can't cut quick enough. Your eye can't process it that quick enough by the angles you're being shown. You know, the best thing is to just be there live. And I'm not just saying that because I've seen a lot of softball in the last couple of weeks. DePaul, they had a good run. They made it to the NCAA tournament, ran through the Big East tournament. But it's really a game you have to see live. Now, baseball, that's a different story. You know, you have a little more reaction time. Of course, the ball's moving a little faster, but that's why, you know, those are the big boys, you know. The major leagues, Major League One, Major League Two. Those are definitely in the tops of baseball films, along with Field of Dreams, of course. You know, yeah. Kevin Costner just knows baseball. That's the way it is. Some guys are good at playing football players. Other guys are good at playing basketball players. Well, I don't know. There haven't been too many great basketball movies, except for Hoop Dreams, Coach. And I got Hoop Dreams. Got them bad. Trotters. Globetrotters. They need a guy like me on defense. I've written their coach a bunch of letters. Haven't heard anything back. We'll see. All I want is a tryout. Give me 5 minutes. I'll do the 40-yard dash, a few dunks off a trampoline. You know, I'll have my own confetti. Yeah, only they'll have to provide the bucket. You know, I have to get a league-approved bucket to toss the confetti in. If not, you know, I may try out for the Generals. Anyways, that's a basketball tangent. We're sticking to baseball today. Oh, Jake Baran, Polka Dot Crockpot, 8:28 in the morning. We're talking about baseball today and all day and all morning, I guess. I'm only on for another hour or so. But, you know, it's just a great game to be around. And I can tell you that from firsthand experience. I've been to a lot of ball games throughout the years of all types. Only one or so minor league, but major league, high school, Little League, you know, on various sides. You know, I've umpired a little bit of recreation softball. Played in, you know, Little League in high school. Sat on that bench. That was a fun bench to sit on in high school. Baseball, you know, you had 25 guys on the team. Only 9 could play at a time. You know, you never knew you were going to get the call, but most times you assumed you didn't, especially when you're as low on the lineup as I was. I was a lifetime 082 hitter in high school, which is... I mean, my on-base percentage was 199, so let's just say I knew how to lean into one. I didn't get a hit until my sophomore year, but then, you know, things took off, and I got two more, and then hurt my shoulder for the year and decided to focus on football. it was a little funny towards the end of the year. I literally couldn't throw. I'd hurt my shoulder and didn't want to stress it. You know, I was more worried about workouts in the weight room. It was transitioning from sophomore to senior year, or junior year. That means I was going to be on varsity. They had to earn a spot, so baseball wasn't my primary concern. So I really couldn't throw. So I had this kid, Colin Keller, a teammate of mine on Fenwick, who we always used to play catch in a three. You know, usually warm up one guy to the other guy, but I'd be the designated catcher, just toss it to him. He'd fire it right back. You know, it was a beautiful arrangement. Not that he didn't was afraid of the ball or anything. He didn't like to catch it, but... I kind of had to charade in front of coach that I could still play. And I did. I pinch ran. I was one of the better pinch runners we had until I got picked off. And it happens. I got a little too cocky, got off base. We were down one run, bottom of the seventh. I think we were playing Maine South at Fenwick. somebody hit a one of our slower fellas hit a long single, and I went in a pinch run, and all I kept thinking was, I gotta get second, gotta get second, need that base. So I took a little bit of a lead. I wasn't too used to leadoffs, not for lack of being on base, but it's just tough to gauge sometimes. You don't know which pitcher has a good move, you know. They're holding the cards, you know. They may have this outstanding move and they'll just get you. Or the hidden ball trick. Always got to be aware of that, guys. Always got to see the ball into the mitt. That's one thing I learned behind the plate. Just got to see the ball into the mitt. Foul tips were the worst, you know. If you're going to hit the ball, hit it fair. Don't hit it back into me. I don't need that. I'm just here to catch the ball. Or let it get by me. And there were some crazy backstops, you know. You play, you know, 100 games a summer. You run into some backstops with some poles, some hard boards that'll send a wild pitch, you know, clear into the outfield if it hits the pole just right. That makes for an interesting game, especially when you're behind the plate. I also know this firsthand. When you do get the ball every play, as you know it's coming to you when you're catching, you also have to realize that you get the ball on every play. So you're involved in, you know, almost every play out there. You got to catch it and throw it back. Sometimes you have to throw it elsewhere. Sometimes, you know, you throw it right back to the pitcher. But when you got a guy who's just hurling, you know, curveballs that aren't working, they're getting the guys to miss, but you can't handle them. That's going to lead to a situation. And I don't know if this was any kind of record. I don't claim it to be, but I once had 6 errors in one game. Okay, yeah, it probably is a CYO record for St. Daniels. But I was behind the plate. There was a few pass balls. You know, I can't remember who was pitching. But it was a cold day, and I was just not leaning over for beans for the entire game. So I let a few go. Then, you know, of course, that led to a few walks, a few base runners running everywhere. My arm was keenly wild, to put it into terms. I could fire it over there, maybe at your ankles, and maybe at your waist, or maybe 7 feet behind you. But I'll get it there. Don't worry about it. So, yeah, let a few of those sail. Clear into the outfield. We battled back, but ultimately I think we lost like 13-7 or something like that. Yeah, it's hard to overcome. It's probably got to be my worst game ever, in baseball-wise. It's not much worse than that. I don't think I even got on base. I may have grounded into a fielder's choice, but what's that? That's nothing to hang your head on. We're going to go to another baseball jam here in a second. I got a lot of them. As I said, this CD I have of baseball's greatest hits, it's from my dad's collection. It went missing for a number of years, and it's been a sore spot. It's around somewhere. Speaking of, I was talking about the rhythms, the poetry of baseball. There's a song for you by Dave Frischberg. It's comprised completely of 1940s baseball players' names. Got a nice little rhythm to it, especially on a Monday morning. I hope you like it. It's called Van Lingle Mungo. V-A-N space L-A-N-G-L-E Lingle Mungo, as in Jerry.
Haney Majeski, Johnny G, Eddie Juiced, Johnny Pesky, Thornton Lee, Danny Gardella, Van Lingle Mungo, Whitey Karowski, Max Lanier, Eddie Waitkus, and Johnny Vandermeer, Bob Estalella, Van Lingle Mungo, Froggy Bergamo, Sigmund Jacoki, Big Johnny Mize, and Barney McCoskey, Hal Trosky, Augie Gullan, and Pinky May, Stan Hack and Frenchie Bordagaray, Phil Cavaretta, George McQuinn, Howard Paulette, and Early Wynn, Roy Campanella, Van Lingle-Mungo. Augie Bergamo, Sigmund Jacoki, Big Johnny Mize, and Barney McCoskey, Hal Trosky, John Antonelli, Ferris Fane, Frankie Crosetti, Johnny Sane, Harry Brookeen, and Lou Boudreaux, Frankie Gustine, and Claude Passo, Eddie Basinski, Ernie Lombardi, Huey Mulcahy, Van Lingle Mungo.
Van Lingle-Mungo. That was a little novelty song from the late 60s, but it's got a nice rhythm to it, I think. You know, there's some great names out there in baseball. You heard it earlier, you know, with Who What, Today, Tomorrow, I Don't Give a Darn, Dizzy Dean Daffy Dean, Boof Bonzer, Rod Beck. Those are just big, pluffy characters. Carl Pavano. You know, I was named after a baseball player. I don't know if you guys knew that. Jacob, can you guess? I don't know. It's a tough one. I don't think there's really been too many. I don't think there's a Jacob in the Hall of Fame other than this particular fellow I was named after. I don't know if there's a Jake in any other Hall of Fame. You know, it's groundbreaking for Jacobs. Nellie Fox. Numbers retired by the Sox, you know, number two. I'll read you his. I've been to the Hall of Fame, seen his plaque. I was there the year he was inducted. His first name was Jacob. It was Jacob Nelson Fox. So that's where I got my name from. I'll read you his Hall of Fame plaque inscription. These are some works of art, the Hall of Fame plaques. You know, it's not. I haven't been to Canton, so I probably shouldn't speak, but, you know, the busts are kind of cool to see these guys' heads, but if you want to look at something artful, that's the Baseball Hall of Fame. They have their likeness, you know, in bronze on the plaque, but they also have, you know, a paragraph description of, you know, how they were as a ball player, you know, not just their stats, not just, you know, their playing history, but, you know, you kind of get a feel for the spirit of these guys, how they played the game, you know, what they contributed. They must be in the Hall of Fame for some sort of reason, and, you know, a lot of it's, you know, how they played, you know, their greatness, their stats, their numbers, but a lot of it is, you know, their respect for the game. They deserve to be honored for the way they play the game. And here's Nellie's Hall of Fame inscription. Sure-handed second baseman and skillful batsman for the Go-Go White Sox of the 1950s. A 12-time American League All-Star who never struck out more than 18 times in a season. His strikeout-to-at-bat ratio was third best all-time. Once went a record 98 games without a strikeout. Played record 798 consecutive games at second. Led league in hits 4 times, putouts 10, fielding percentage 6 times. Won the 1959 AL MVP honors by helping Chicago to its first flag in 40 years. And that's really what he meant. You know, he was a reliable guy who, you know, played for, geez, he was, like you said, 12-time All-Star. He was the second baseman of the 60s, really. And he, you know, he didn't get as much pub as the other guys because he didn't put up the power numbers, but he was a 280 hitter, 292 career average, I believe. And he just got on base. He played scrappy. He, you know, like you said, his defense was good. Look at his putouts. 10 times he led the league. You know, you hit it to Nelly, he's going to suck it up and fire it to first. He made a great double play combo with Louis Aparicio. He's another Hall of Famer. Fox and Aparicio, those were the two little wizards of the infield, as Gene Shepard would call them. Nothing like a good double play combo. You know, you two guys, you're sure when that ball gets hit up the middle, it's zip, 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 two outs. It's a great weapon to have in your back pocket. Just 2-4-1. Oh, man. Double play, double headers. Yeah, speaking of, I played a few double headers in high school. It wasn't bad. You know, maybe the second game I'd actually get in, you know, being down there at the end of the bench. But there was always good camaraderie, good amigos on the bench, you know. The kids who were, I shouldn't say used to not playing so much, but, you know, they were more focused on other things, you know, like BSing around and nicknames and sunflower seeds and who was in the crowd and, you know, pulling pranks and all that good stuff. That's what the bench was for. I tried to learn how to juggle on the bench, but that never really caught wind. But what I did learn was a great appreciation for chatter, you know, keeping things lively on the bench. You know, rarely do you go to a ball game and nobody's talking, you know, you gotta keep it lively, keep it moving, you know, even if what you say doesn't always make sense. you know, just, you gotta cut things up a little bit. It's baseball. You gotta play relaxed. Keep your knees loose, you know. There's one little league coach I used to have, stay on the balls of your feet. And it confused me for so long. The balls of your feet, what is he talking about? Well, if you reach down and you feel your foot, you know, just, you know, a little inwards from the big toe, there's, you know, what resembles a sphere. And that's what was the balls of your feet. So, you know, he could have said stay on your toes, but that was the lexicon old Coach Jones used to use. But you got to be talking, too. You got to say, hey, everybody, shoot shop, ooh, Barry, count, Chocula, count, 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 Chocula. You know, just a little rhythm, ooh, shoot shop, pop, pop, hit, ooh, now here. Everybody, hey, hop. You know, it may not even make some sense. It's just chatter, just keeping it loose. You know, talking on the baseball field. Hey, who's got one, need one, easy out, aye, hot shot, ooh, ready. You know, barking out some nonsensical phrases. You just whatever you see. And hey, ooh, white shirt, oh, hot pine tar. Here we go, pine tar. Hey, Dwight, come on, Dwight. Who needs a Dwight? Dwight and berries. Baseball chatter. Oh, you know, the guys coming to the plate. You know, there's some good last names out there to shout. Hey, Stephen Lamar, Lamar, Mac Lamar. There you go, back, rob, back, rob, back, rob, back, 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 rob, back, rob, back. Go now, kid. Hey, be more. You know, that's the chatter, that's the rhythm, that's the poetry of baseball. Maybe incoherent at times, but, you know, all of us can be sometimes. Just the emotion, the fire, the passion. You know, you hear that in the crowd sometimes. You know, and I've been a part of that that part of the game for a while. I worked at the ballpark for 6 years, and if you don't know what ballpark I'm talking about, then you can kindly turn off this program and you know, head up to the north side. Sox Park. I worked for 6 years. I worked for a restaurant company, and I was right by an old plate in the scout seats. You know, the expensive seats down there, and it was incredible, really. You know, walking in the tunnels, you know, I'd see Roger Bossert, the head's groundkeeper, all the time. He'd walk in our dining room, have a bit to eat, you know, because where I worked, there was a dining room inside, and then there was the seating area, which was, you know, right by an home plate on camera. So these were the expensive seats, and, you know, the food was good, the tips were good, the work was good, you know, and every now and then I got to see, you know, a few ball players walk by and, you know, look at the umpires, and, you know, they'd send me out there to do hot dogs. I was 18, 19 at the time, and these seats were relatively new. So, you know, getting to walk down the tunnel, right? I knew where the camera was. I knew when the camera was on. So walking right down that tunnel right after a pitch, and I knew where the microphone was, too, behind the home plate, and getting my hot dog call on the air. I developed a good one over the years. Yeah, it's a bit of a manipulation of my normal speech, but when you sell something, sometimes you got to do that. You got to make a compromise. Hey, hot dog. Hey, all beef kosher dog here. Hey, hot dog. Hot dog. Oh, and I could sling them. You know, the beauty of it was in our section, you know, it was a $200 ticket, which was all inclusive for, you know, food and drink all game. So I didn't have to, you know, collect money or do any of that nonsense with people. I could just sling them, you know. And I'm just standing there at the bottom, you know, tossing them 5 rows up, tossing them 10 rows up. You know, people, hey, dog man. You know, I actually got in trouble from, you know, the stadium ops folks. You know, it was a bit of a distraction behind home plate to, you know, standing at the bottom and tossing dogs 12 rows up. They told me to cut that out, which, you know, I obliged. But it was glory while it lasted. You know, hey, hot dog. Hey, where's the guy who throws the hot dogs? You know, he had a mullet last time. Wait, what? Oh, yeah, Jake. Yeah, he'll be around. Give him some time. Hey, bratwurst. Sauerkraut bratwurst. Oh, and I could really sling him. But I did that for a time. Then I actually graduated. I became a bartender in one of the other parts of the stadium. This was the old press box. So this is 200 level, you know, first level off the main concourse and right behind home plate. It was a beautiful view of the game. You know, if you got to sit anywhere, you know, this is where you take in a game from. You know, I served up there, was behind the bar a little bit, and it was interesting. You know, we got to see how the fan service side of the ballpark operated. This was headquarters for, you know, we're right above the security headquarters downstairs and the management headquarters. And, you know, sometimes you never think about these things, you know, when you go to a ballpark. You certainly don't. But all the modern ballparks, I should say, even Wrigley Field, from the renovations, they all have these things, you know. I don't think there's a stadium being built nowadays without a few luxury suites. And yeah, you gotta have a few, but you know, don't ruin the facade of the field. Don't make the park look ugly just so you can have you know, ruined seats for, you know, 9,000 other people just because you have to have a bunch of, you know, 700 six-figure Ricks sitting on their fannies in air conditioning with the windows closed, drinking Perrier while on their iPad. That's not what going to a ball game's about, you know. That's what I never do when I go to a ball game. I've also had the fortunate luck of having an old man who gets some dynamite seats. I don't think I've thanked him enough over the years, but when we were growing up, we'd go to Sox games and it'd be, you know, right second row right behind Sox on deck circle, you know, right there. These seats were better than the mayor's. You know, he was 4 rows back. We were in the second row. How cool is that? You know, and we got our share of fall balls from the ball boys. It was great. It was awesome. And then when they did build the scout seats I was talking about earlier, they kicked us out, you know, which is a little sad. They had to clear us out to make room for those luxury seatings behind home plate. And, you know, it kind of took away a little bit of, you know, the charm of it. But it did lead to something entirely terrific otherwise, which was the seats we had right by the visitors on deck circle. Oh, so close. You know, you see the guys warming up. Of course, they have the security guard there. You have to keep it PG-13. You got to be civil. You know, you can heckle, but it can't be mean-spirited. You know, the best way to heckle, of course, you know, for most guys, you just shout their last name. Jason Kubel was the one I always gave a hard time. Minnesota Twins. Sad we don't see him anymore. But Kubel. He turns around. What? Nothing. You can get into that these guys' heads sometimes. I was at a game with my brother one time, and Prince Fielder didn't take too kindly to a few things we noticed about his appearance. So we had to calm down that day. But I've given Joe Mauer a verbal beating, you know. Hey, where's your power, Mauer? Not this hour, Mauer. Strike three, hit the showers, Mauer. Just taking it to him. Joe Mauer's a good guy. That's why I kept it clean for him. You know, I wouldn't say anything I wouldn't say to his mother. But yeah, here we go. I can toss it up to a fellow by the name of Steve Goodman over here. I've talked a lot of socks. Where'd that come from? I think it's because I was with a kid from Boston last night. He talked with this heavy accent. I thought, at first I thought, you know, something wrong with this guy's speech. Is he a little... Oh, no, he's just from Boston. So he had that, you know, Boston drawl. Here's a song by a Chicagoan about a Chicago team. They're a four-letter word I don't like to say. You know, seeing that logo was a bullseye for me. But here's a good one by Steve Goodman about a fan base and their eternal misery.
By the shores of old Lake Michigan, where the hawk wind blows so cold, an old Cub fan lay dying in his midnight hour, the toll. Round his bed his friends had all gathered. They knew his time was short. And on his head they put this bright blue cap from his all-time favorite sport. Told him it's late, it's getting dark in here, and I know it's time to go. But before I leave the lineup, boys, there's just one thing that I'd like to know. Do they still play the blues in Chicago when baseball season rolls around? When the snow melts away, do the Cubbies still play in their ivy-covered burial ground? When I was a boy, they were my pride and joy, but now they only bring fatigue to the home of the brave, the land of the free, and the doormat of the National League. Told his friends, you know the law of averages says anything will happen that can. That's what it says. But the last time the Cubs won a National League pennant was the year we dropped the bomb on Japan. The Cubs made me a criminal, sent me down a wayward path. They stole my youth from me, that's the truth. I'd forsake my teachers to go sit in the bleachers in flagrant truancy. And then one thing led to another, and soon I discovered alcohol, gambling, dope, football, hockey, lacrosse, tennis, but what do you expect when you raise up a young boy's hopes and then just crush them like so many paper beer cups, year after year after year, after year after year after year after year after year, till those hopes are just so much popcorn for the pigeons beneath the L tracks to eat. He said, you know, I'll never see Wrigley Field anymore before my eternal rest. If you have your pencils and your scorecards ready, I'll read you my last request. He said, give me a doubleheader funeral in Wrigley Field on some sunny weekend day, no lights. Have the organ play the national anthem, and then a little na-na-na-na, hey, 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 goodbye. Make six bullpen pitchers carry my coffin, and six groundskeepers clear my path. Have the umpires bark me out at every base in all their holy wrath. It's a beautiful day for a funeral. Hey, Ernie, let's play too. Some somebody go get Jack Brickhouse to come back and conduct just one more interview. Have the Cubbies run right out into the middle of the field. Have Keith Moreland drop a routine fly. Give everybody two bags of peanuts and a frosty malt, and I'll be ready to die. Build a big fire on home plate out of your Louisville Slugger baseball bats and toss my coffin in. Let my ashes blow in a beautiful snow from the prevailing 30-mile-an-hour southwest wind. When my last remains go flying over the left field wall, we'll bid the bleacher bums adieu. And I will come to my final resting place out on Waveland Avenue. The dying man's friends told him to cut it out. They said, "Stop it, that's an awful shame." He whispered, "Don't cry, we'll meet by and by near the Heavenly Hall of Fame." He said, "I've got season's tickets to watch the Angels now. So that's just what I'm gonna do." He said, "But you, the living, you're stuck here with the Cubs. So it's me that feels sorry for you." And he said, "Oh, play that Lonesome Losers tune. That's the one I like the best." Closed his eyes and slipped away. Scotty, it was the dying Cub fans' last request. So here it is. Do they still play the blues in Chicago when baseball season rolls around? When the snow melts away, do the Cubbies still play in their ivy covered burial ground? When I was a boy, they were my pride and joy, but now they only bring fatigue to the home of the brave.
It's really, really a telling line, isn't it? Haven't won a National League pennant since the year we dropped a bomb on Japan. That's how many years now? God, it's 40, 60, carry the 7, minus 12. About 90 years. All right, we'll have a guest on here shortly. Actually, right now, it's Bubba Jerian. He's a catcher at Ohio State. He's caught a few more games than I have, but he knows what it's like to be behind the plate. What's going on, Bub?
How you doing there, Jake?
Oh, terrific, terrific. What's going on this morning?
Not too much. Just doing a little bit of running around.
Yeah, yeah. Your season just wrapped up, didn't it?
It sure did, yep.
Yeah, how was the year for you guys? Anything exciting happened?
You know, it was interesting. I actually think I set a record for the region with 3 ejections on the year.
How do you do that?
Well, me and umpires don't necessarily see eye to eye very often, Jake.
Oh, okay. But, you know, is it balls and strikes or?
Well, it starts off that way, and then kind of just develops from there. My first ejection was actually my second game of the season. We were down in Arkansas playing a little tournament there for a spring break trip, and just dealing with absolutely horrible umpiring. We were actually dealing with not real umpires. We were dealing with students from the school that we were playing against, who were all probably, you know, 19 years old, I'd say, was a.
What, like intramural umpires?
Yeah, it was a joke is what it was.
Yeah, those guys aren't trained to handle that level of ball.
No shot. It was embarrassing to be there, and these guys don't know where to be with their when they're trying to make calls and whatnot. So I had a few words throughout the game, and I don't know if you have. I'm sure you have seen the movie Bull Durham, but there are in fact words that umpires do not like to hear at any point. And I apparently use too many of them.
Oh, well, yeah, you press enough buttons, so, you know, the alarm's going to go off.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what it is, you know.
Well, you've umpired before, so you've seen it from that side.
Oh, I've been on both sides. I've been around the game of baseball my whole life, and I know what it's like to blow calls. I know what it's like to have calls blown against me. And
well, what do you like? You like an umpire who's going to be honest with you, say, "Hey, I blew that call," or one who's just going to be resolute? You know, going to be staunch in his stance either way.
Well, you know what? I go back and forth, but if in my opinion, it's okay. You're going to miss one once in a while, but make up for it. You know what I mean? I mean, if you blow a call, you better give me the next borderline call.
Yeah, you know, I like to think that way too, but, you know, that's a sticky situation, especially for these guys who are umpiring at such a high level that, you know, you miss one, but that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, especially in the majors, that you're going to make one up. I mean, if you can do it slyly and nobody will notice, yeah, but, you know, it's got to be that perfect storm of a call that you can make right up to a team.
Right, right. I mean, it's a tough road to go down, but me and staunch umpires don't really get along too well. I like to have little lively conversations back there, and sometimes they don't take too kindly to it.
Well, so, is that what you do when you get back there? You kind of settle in, you know, chat them up?
Oh, absolutely. You know, how's your day? You know, what do you do for a living? And most of them are not umpires, strictly, so.
Yeah.
You know, talk about the family, the kids. you know, just get to know them a little bit. I ask them what their favorite color is.
Oh yeah, you know, so, you gotta work them a little bit. Then they're more likely to, you know, they feel like they know you.
You gotta get them on your side some way.
Yeah, exactly.
Some way, somehow.
Bring them out a pocket full of beef jerky or something, you know.
you know, there's always something you can do. Which my second attraction that kind of backfired on me.
How's that?
Well, I literally was doing that all game long. Man's name was Phil.
Okay.
He was a classy man all the way through about the fourth inning. He was actually complaining to me about his contact and how he couldn't see. And he's a home plate umpire for a college baseball game, talking about how he can't see.
Uh-huh.
So, but, you know, it's all right. You know, he's doing okay. He's doing the best of what he had. I come into the box about the fourth inning, and I get down 0-2, and when you get down 0-2, the other team, the entire game, was throwing waste pitches in the other batter's box. So they're just trying to get someone to chase.
Uh-huh.
So I get down 0-2, and they do the same thing to me. Well, he rings me up on it.
Whoa!
I said, Phil, that's terrible. You got to check your contact, my man.
Oh.
And he, without hesitation, threw me out of the game immediately and threatened me with 3-game suspension.
Oh, man. How did he say it? Did he just lift a finger?
Oh, no. He was very forceful in it. So I had to go sit on the bus. So what I did is I one-upped him. I drove the bus up to the backstop, and every time my team did something good, I laid on the horn.
That'll show them.
Yeah, so, you know, you can't really keep a good man down, you know what I mean?
Oh, man. Oh, that's a hoot.
Yeah. You know, I had a good time. I've had some good times.
All right, so number three.
Number three was actually the same type of scenario, and after that second ejection, my coach told me, you know, I got to maintain my composure and can't talk to the umpires like that. He said, next time if that happens again, just, you know, walk back to the dugout slowly, you know, do what you got to do to calm down. I said, all right. So, it was actually in the playoffs, my last game, and we're getting the old reach around from these umpires, you know.
Okay.
And so I've had just about enough of it. And I get down. It was this time it was a full count with a man on second.
Uh-huh.
And ball in the dirt, and he rang me up on it.
Ooh.
So I stood in the box for a little bit extra time and just, you know, had my thoughts to myself. And as I walked by, I drew a line in the sand where that ball bounced. And just had to keep on walking right out to the parking lot. There was no hesitation from any of these umpires.
So sometimes you don't even need to say a word.
I mean, the other team had warnings upon warnings. My team had a couple warnings, but I didn't get a warning. I just got heaved immediately.
That's it. You are
Yeah.
Oh, there.
He had about enough of me from behind the plate, so chirping at him all game long, so.
Oh, man. Oh, God. Those are some three of the best ejections I've heard. You know, sometimes it's not such a great story, but those are dynamite.
I tell you what, you should have been there, because they were a lot funnier in person.
I'm playing playing a few baseball songs. You got any requests there, bub?
I'm willing to bet he already played Put Me In, Coach.
Oh, no, I actually got that on the vinyl.
Wow, you got to throw that on for me then.
All right, I'm going to cue her up here in a second. So, what are you up to this summer? Are you playing ball this summer?
I'm not actually. I'm actually probably going to look to go to Northern Illinois to continue my career. So, I'm going to see if I can keep going a little bit here for a while.
Oh, really? Yeah. Huskies.
Yeah.
How'd they do this year? I know another friend of ours, Kevin Sweeney, was a pitcher down there.
Yep. I'm familiar with Kevin.
Oh yeah, you guys played Clear Ridge ball, neighborhood ball, growing up.
We sure did. We sure did.
Yeah, that whole Sweeney family. I got to call Joe. I got to talk to him. You know, just how you've been ejected three times. Joe was actually on the bottom of three dog piles.
Some people have more. It's better to be lucky than good sometimes.
That's what I always say. That's the same. All right, well, I'm going to let you go, Bub, and put on some center field for you.
All right, I appreciate it.
All right, good talking to you.
All right, bye.
Good conversation with Bubba Jerry and a good, solid kid from the Southwest side. Heck of a ball player, too. He always, routinely played above his age level when we were kids. But now I got a little John Fogerty for you guys. You know him, lead singer of Creedence Clearwater Revival for all those years. Oh no, that's what I'm gonna play. The old man is down the road. Okay, now let me cue it up here on the old record player. Sorry about that, guys. I thought I had it right this time. Must have switched up the buttons here in the control room. You know, they're always doing that kind of stuff just to mess with me. Hazing me, because I'm the new guy. You know, the old rooming with the monkey gag, Fred Randall. But let me get to John Fogerty. No, not the Nexus 5. I hate this, online stuff. That's why I had the vinyl all set to go. You don't got to sit through Vivo and watch the commercials. And it's ridiculous. No, this ad is not relevant to me. I don't need to see Gillette. Well, maybe I do. No. You know, the worst are car ads. I don't need a car. Well, I'm getting a car. But not a brand new car like that. You know, it's wonderful the things they're doing. Here we go. John Fogerty. Put me in coach.
We're
Thank you for that one, Mr. Fogarty. We got about 15 minutes left here. You know, I think we're going to have to continue with next week's show talking baseball. That is, unless something extraordinary happens, and we'll have to change the topic. But, you know, it's got such a rich history, you know, rich story, everything about it. You can, you know, talk for days about it. You know, Ken Burns, you see those baseball documentaries he made? Each installment was about 2 hours long. And he broke it up into 9 parts. And each part is just enthralling. It's a great watch. You know, it takes you from the inception of the game, you know, Civil War era, and then carries it all the way up through professional leagues, you know, when they first started in the late 1860s, 1870s, 1880s, you know, it's when the National League was founded. You know, sports writers were starting to come of age. It was an exciting time. And as James Earl Jones says, baseball, Ray, baseball has been the one constant in America. Baseball. Oh, yeah, though. Yeah, I'll have to give a few other folks a call. That was some interesting stories from Bubs there. You know, that's it's a relationship that, you know, it's interesting to get an insight on. It's, you know, players and umpires, you know, the guys who manage the game, the guys who are in charge, the guys who really may not always be right, but they're never wrong. Those, you know, without them, we don't play the game. The men in blue, up to you. I always wanted one of those umpire hats, you know, the one that said AL, Al, like the guy in Angels in the Outfield. Triscuit Mesmer. Oh, you want to talk about a fictional slugger from a baseball movie. Triscuit Mesmer, the catcher for the Anaheim Angels. Oh, this guy could swing a bat. You know, along with Matthew McConaughey was in that flick. You know, Danny Glover. You know, there's these scenes in it that are just incredible. Triscuit Mesmer, you know, the wrong kind of... Oh, you just got to see this movie. It's got a young Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Tony Danza, that's his name. Danny Glover. It's just a fantastic flick. Here's a little clip from it.
Boys are summer, and it's a big bummer. No matter who we play, we give the game away. Cause we can't win, that would be a sin. We even lose the games before they
save it, Maple!
Bummer.
One more loss, which could have been a win.
You call yourselves professionals.
I have never, ever seen a worse group of 25 players.
You don't think as a team. You don't play as a team. You don't even lose as a team. You all got your heads so far up your butts, you can't even see the light of day. One more loss, and I'll do this. Each and every one of you. I want you here in uniform at 9 tomorrow. We're going back to work on fundamentals.
Fundamentals? In the middle of the season?
I thought the game started at 1.
It does start at 1, and you're a jackass.
No, I'm a pitcher. You can be a pitcher and a jackass.
See, is Eddie coming?
Angels in the Outfield, great flick. I strongly recommend it if you've never seen it. I'm going to play another song from that baseball CD before I get out of here. It's one that's got a sampling of Mel Allen that is eloquent, really, for a song of its type. Well, just judge it for yourself. Here's Baseball Dreams.
Hello there, everybody. This is Mel Allen. It's a bright, sunny afternoon, and what a beautiful day for a ball game.
I called me a baseball bat from a tree. I joined the little league and got me a glove. It was then I knew baseball was my love. I learned all the rules of the game. I memorized every player's name. There was Babe Ruth hitting home runs. That's the truth, he was number one. Between first and second, there ain't no sharing. Breaking Ruth's record came Hank Aaron.
The Bambino wound up 714 round trippers in a glorious career. A record that stood until 1974 when Hammerin' Hank Aaron became baseball's home run king.
Said I was sitting in the classroom starting to dream. Cool fast pitching, I could hear the fans scream.
Here's the windup, the pitch, the count 3-2. He swung that stick and that ball flew. Man alive, what a drive. A grand slam homer, that ain't no jive.
The teacher woke me up as I was heading for the plate. I had another class and it was getting kinda late.
Baseball is a dream for me, yeah. And the major leagues is the place to be.
You're right.
Baseball is a dream for me,
me too.
And the major leagues is the place to be.
Right on. 95 degrees at game time. That's a hot one. Reminds me of one of those old Brooklyn stickball days.
You got to say, hey, kid, Yaz, Aaron, and the Mick. All Street Hills boys, take your pick. Let the ball bounce once, then take your swings. Touch those sewers as the neighborhood sings.
And while playing ball on the city streets, many youngsters have wide-eyed Major League vision.
Baseball's been a dream for me. It's a place to be in the major leagues. That's right. You're wrong. Yeah. Great sampling, you know. I like how you guys combined hip-hop and all that stuff and a 1950s play-by-play broadcaster. Never seen that done before. It's great. I'm excited that people are trying these new things. Well, today it's going to close today's show. I got to get out of here a little early. I apologize again today, guys. I'll be around for a full 2 hours next week, though. Hopefully, if I can make it out alive. But this has been another sterling edition of the Polka Dot Crackpot. I'm Jake Barrett on Radio DePaul. I'm going to close you out with I talk about fight songs sometimes, how they're poetic. And this is, one I've been singing for a few years now. And, it's near and dear to my heart. And it only became, gained recent popularity. It was popular years ago, but only came back into public consciousness in about, the last 10 years when the Sox started winning. Started to play at the ballpark and get that crowd riled, rearing, red, ready to go. I've known this song since I was a kid, though.
And you will hear us sing. Let's go, 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 White Sox.